Is Eternals Marvel's most divisive movie yet? We answer that question and more this week on Only Stupid Answers. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. This is a show where we answer your questions about movies, TV shows, comic books, Eternals, Deviants, and all of the rest. With me, as always, is Roxy Stryer.
DJ, I feel like we're twinning today a little bit with our shirts.
A little bit. What the little my is yours gray also?
No, that's what I was thinking. Yours looks more gray. Mine's a little more green. But for some reason on screen, I feel as if they are, and I don't know what this term actually means, complementary colors.
I also don't know what that term means.
So, it might actually mean when it's across the wheel of each other, it might mean like blue and red or some shit like that.
Yeah.
But I think the colors complement each other.
I agree. But I think you're right, because on camera, it looks very, it's like we coordinated.
Yes. Yeah. And we did.
We did. We call, it may not look like it every week, but we call. Each other.
Yeah, we call.
And make sure we're going to be wearing complimentary.
This week? Oh, good. I'll wear yellow. Just cause.
Just because. But as I hinted at the beginning of the episode, we are going to be talking about Eternals, spoiler free, this episode. But before we do that, as always, if you want the full discussion, if you want to watch this live, if you want to watch this early, or if you want the new Patreon exclusive show that I'm doing with our pal Sal from Comic Pop, talking about every live action Spider-Man movie leading up to Spider-Man No Way Home, you can do that over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. If you listen to this on iTunes, please give us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. It helps out the show tremendously. And then if you listen on Spotify, every week we ask you a question. Last week we asked you, what is your favorite holiday? What is your favorite holiday? Ray Rafael Alvarez says, Halloween is the most fun, but I think Christmas decorating and Christmas movies are the best. I aim to rewatch Jingle All the Way every year until I die. And Xavier Thomas says, the best holidays are the ones you don't have to show up for work/school. And I'm inclined to agree with that. All right.
I think that if you're going to think about it like that, though, then snow days are your favorite holidays. Which, is that a holiday? You're a Florida boy. You don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, before Florida, I lived in Arizona, and now I live here, so I have never experienced a snow day.
Yeah, we used to, in Boston, have not only snow days, but cold days, which is when it's too cold to go outside. It's not snowing. It's not raining. You can't go outside or you'll freeze to death.
Oh, my God.
You cannot go to school. It's like when it hits below -7 or something that they're like, nope. Not doing it, because they have to ensure that if you walk to school that you don't die on your way there.
That seems fair. That feels like a general obligation we should have as a culture.
Yep. Totally.
The no such luxuries for work. No, you're coming in today, damn it. As I said earlier, on Patreon, there's a new exclusive Patreon show where we're talking about all the Spider-Man movies with Sal. So please go check that out. Also, for Hellbent backers, those should be shipping out within the week, but barring any unforeseen complications. And there have been plenty in this whole process. So, all the comics and cards and stickers and all of that are residing in my home, just waiting for me to pack them up and send them to you. So look forward to all of that.
Is it a lot of boxes?
It is a lot of boxes. It is a lot.
That's good though.
But everything, the comic looks really cool. The tarot cards turn out really cool. I'm really happy with all of it. So I'm very excited to send it to you all. Now, before we get into Eternals spoiler free, let's do a little bit of what we're into. Roxy, what are you into? You're into some HBO stuff this week, yeah?
Yeah, really into some HBO stuff. So HBO is totally back. Curb Your Enthusiasm is back. Insecure is back. And Succession is back, which means that I am glued to HBO right now. So weird to call. I don't know whether that's HBO or HBO Max. These are all shows that started before HBO Max existed, but I'm watching them on HBO Max. So maybe just HBO. I don't know if you have thoughts on that, DJ, but whatever. I like the I like the HBO / HBO Max shows.
Yeah. For me, it's just HBO because I never really had HBO connected to like cable. So to me, it's just HBO.
So are you not, when you're watching these, you don't watch them on Max?
I watch them on Mac, but the app I use for HBO is now just Max. It's all just kind of the same thing for me.
Yeah, okay, me too. Yeah. So weird. But anyway, so all three of these are great. Right now, we're on the first episode of Insecure, the first episode of Curb, and the second episode of Succession. I am kind of interested why Succession came back a week prior to these other two.
Yeah.
But whatever, they're all here. And do you watch any of these, DJ?
I do watch Insecure. I do watch Insecure, however, I've been starting the new season. I have not checked out Curb. And do you think I'd like Succession? I'm always kind of surprised. Like, whenever I see trailers for them, I'm like, all right, it looks like Suits or something to me. It doesn't look like something that I would find terribly engaging, but like people love it. Like so there must be something going on there.
What's challenging is that I think you hate watching rich white people exist on screen just to be dicks. Like I, you know, as a la Dave for a minute, why you prefer Rami to Dave.
Yeah.
Is that it's just really hard to relate to the problems of somebody who like we have nothing in common.
Yeah.
And so Succession, you don't feel for really any of them. You're watching it and you're like, I don't know what any of this is like. I mean, these are the richest of the rich people, the most business, Wall Street-y family. But the show is so well done that to me, it's definitely, you like Billions?
I've never seen Billions.
Oh. Mm. Yeah, I can't think of anything you have said you've watched that you love that is in the same vein of this. Okay. So I'd be interested to know how you feel. I know you would know it's a well-done show, but whether you actually enjoyed it, I'm not sure. At its core, it's a family drama.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It reminds me of like the Kennedys. Okay. You know, they're a powerful, make things go away. They literally borrow Chappaquiddick almost to a T at some point during the series.
Okay.
And so they're really like the biggest, richest pieces of crap who are all stabbing each other in the back. And the whole premise of the show is like, who's going to end up on top running the company?
Yeah.
And there's all different people. By the way, did you see any of the stuff about Brian Cox's book that just came out?
No. So I saw it trending and I was confused because I think there was some confusion on there's two different Brian Coxes. There's one that's there was the one that wrote the book who's different from the actor, or maybe they are the same
Brian
person.
Cox is not the actor Brian Cox. I think it is.
Is it?
Yeah, I think the person who wrote the book is Brian Cox.
What's the book?
On all the other actors that he's worked with?
Oh, is it that? Because I saw some like science book coming up and they were calling him Professor Brian Cox or whatever.
And oh, I didn't see that. No, he was going in on Johnny Depp and Steven Seagal and Michael Caine.
Then yes, that is probably the same Brian
Cox. I was like, what are the Brian Coxes there?
Yeah.
I haven't read the book, but there was certain, I actually took screen grabs of some of it. But he doesn't think Johnny Depp is very talented. He thinks Michael Caine is an institution, doesn't have range. Like he gave a lot of what? Okay.
I will say I do like Brian Cox, isn't it? Like when he shows up with someone, I'm like, oh, I like this guy.
Love Brian Cox. And he is the perfect patriarch of this family. He is, you want to more than punch him in the face.
Okay.
He is the worst human being I've ever seen on TV. Like, it's horrible, horrible. And his kids all learn from him, but they're trying to be better, but they just like don't even have the tools to be better people.
Yeah.
Really good. Don't know if you'll love it, but it is excellently done.
I'll give it a look. HBO shows are kind of like FX shows where even if it's not like clicking, it's like, well, there's still like a lot of talent here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this season we finally built to a place where there's a divide in the company. And we're almost at like a battle of two sides right now.
Gotcha.
So we're finally, I feel like this is the third season. Mm-hmm. We're finally in a place where it's like, who's going to start making moves. Yeah. So I'm really into Succession. On the other end of that is a show that's been on for 11 seasons now, 14 seasons.
What's I was going to say, I think closer to 14, you're talking about Curb.
Yeah. Whatever season we're on, I thought last season was phenomenal of Curb. I know that a lot of people fell off after like seven seasons of the show. This show is really good. The premiere was not as good as last season's premiere episode, but still really funny. And we are dealing with like a post-quarantine world with Larry David. So you can kind of picture what that looks like. Just like all the idiosyncrasies and like just disturbances that he has about hoarders during COVID or COVID in general or anti-vax, you know, just like he has issues with everything. And so it makes for a really funny, we know people like this during this time, but it's Larry David. So it definitely had a really strong premiere. And then Insecure, I don't want to give any spoilers because I know you watch it, but I thought it was a really good first episode, but I'm kind of bummed with what they did in the last 5 minutes of it. In terms of love life stuff. But you know, I don't think that that's the reason you watch the show, DJ. I don't think you care as much about the love life than the love triangles as I do.
Yeah.
But for me, as a lover of love, a shipper of ships, I just am so confused on like what they're gonna do with Molly's love story, with Issa's love story. Like, what? We only have one season, so what are we doing?
Yeah. It is wild that there's only one season, and it is interesting. Although I want to say, you also binged Insecure, right? Like, you haven't been watching it since it premiered.
No, I started it in pandemic.
Yeah, so the pandemic has been long enough that I think we also started in the pandemic. Like, it feels like a long time ago, but we have been in pandemic for a long time. And so I think for me that, I don't have the history with those relationships that, like, people that, like, watched it since the beginning that, like, have, like, there's camps. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's when you watch a show like that, it's, like, it's harder, at least for somebody like me, to, like, form a camp. You're just kind of letting it play out. You know what I mean? But I'm very excited to check that out. And you know what? I'll definitely check out Succession because I've heard good things. And I should start checking out Curb just because, I've always heard good things. And then I saw the trailer for this season. And there's a moment where and I don't know if it's in the first episode or whatever. It was just in the trailer where Larry's stuck in traffic. And he's basically like bitching about being in traffic. He's like, only dumb people get stuck in traffic. I shouldn't be in traffic. And it's one of those, obviously I wouldn't phrase it the same way, but I do try to like organize my life so I don't end up in traffic. And so when it happens, it's like, I should have figured out a way around this.
So DJ, you just described the show in 1 second. Mm-hmm. Everything that Larry does, you kind of get with, like, you're kind of like, I wouldn't have done it like that, but I know what you're thinking and saying.
Yes.
Like, I totally get it. You're an asshole. Mm-hmm. And then you go above and beyond to be an asshole. But your initial thought, I feel that. I feel that. I get that. And it definitely makes you question the like ickiest parts of yourself that say things like only dumb people get stuck in traffic. And it's like, what kind of a sentence is that? But when traffic is.
It's tricky. It's tricky. And it's something that I definitely don't have a handle on because I'm not a comedian. But I do think there's a lot of like comedic value in that. Like just taking that feeling that everybody has. And instead of by the time it would leave our mouths, we would have filtered it through some stuff to take the edge off a little bit. It's like, but what if somebody didn't? And so it's like, it's relatable, but it's also forcing you to self-reflect a little bit on the thought, on just the raw thoughts you have. Like, maybe I should process these thoughts differently. I don't know. Anyway, I haven't watched the show, so I don't know, but I should check it out.
You've never seen one episode?
I have not.
I see you really liking Curb.
I'll check it out. I will say shows, and this one has the benefit of it's like a half hour comedy, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whenever it's a show that like, and it's also an HBO show, so I'm assuming each season's like 10 to 13 episodes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit better than when people are like, oh, 15 seasons of Supernatural. I'm like, that's not happening.
Yeah. No freaking way. No freaking way. Curb, I kind of don't think you need to start at the beginning. You could, but like, it's very similar tone. I feel like It's Always Sunny and Curb are the two shows that no matter how long they're on for, I will keep watching because they never get stale.
Yeah.
Because the characters are so strong. But if you think you could kind of pick up It's Always Sunny at any point, I think you could kind of pick up Curb at any point.
That makes sense to me. The other one I think about, as far as you talk about people dropping off, is like other institutions, like a South Park, that it's like, it's waves. Like maybe you'll come on, watch for a few seasons and then leave, and then it's still on. So then you pick up the next few seasons. You know what I mean? And it's...
Right. Yeah. And maybe you don't get some of the callbacks, but like, that's fine.
Yeah. That's all good. So very exciting. I love all these HBO shows. And I know people, there's issues with that, but I like HBO Max has a ton of great stuff on it. And I also have the same questions about what's the distinction between HBO Max and HBO, but whatever, we'll figure it out someday.
Will we?
I mean, they have to, I guess. Yeah. As far as branding. Before we get into what I'm into this week, we'll cut to a quick ad break. All right, we are back, and this week what I'm into, and I was actually into it a couple weeks ago, but I had to wait for Roxy to catch up. We're going to talk about, then Roxy had to wait for me to catch up, which just, we had to wait to catch up. It's only Murders in the Building. So Roxy, I want to say, it was like you and Josh, I don't remember who mentioned it first on the show.
Josh mentioned it,
and then you watched it, and then you mentioned it, and then it was like, okay, I'll give this a shot. And I was a little bit, I was a little bit unsure. And this show's great. It's great. It's delightful. It's adorable.
Delightful is such a good word. It is digestible. Mm-hmm. It is easy to watch at any time of day. It's funny, but like cute. I'm really into shows like this that are just, it's not trying too hard. It's just like, this is our show. Here it is. And I'm like, thank you.
Well, it's an interesting balance because you're right that it's not trying too hard. And I feel like a lot of the terms I use to describe it would be kind of like derisive terms on other shows, but it's not here. And I have trouble in my brain. Like there's stuff this show does, like little like cute stuff or stylistic stuff that I feel like in a different context would annoy me. But on this show, it's nice and simple and fun, and the whole cast is great. We got Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez, and they're all great. I know for me, the standout is usually Martin Short because he reminds me of like a lot of actors like Matt Berry, and what was the? I'm totally blanking right now. The lady we both love on White Lotus,
Jennifer Coolidge.
Yes, you can take a normal line and just through their delivery, make it hilarious. Like on paper, it's not a joke, but the way they deliver it, it's fucking hilarious. That's for me, that's a lot of Martin Short's comedy. And it's just, like you said, it's light, but also, I mean, they're doing the work. It's not, it's a well put together show.
Totally. It's really, really good. I think that one of the reasons why I can get away with things that other shows can't right now is that tonally, I don't know any other show that's like this on TV right now.
Yeah.
And we've got three mega stars from two very different generations on the show. So just watching their chemistry definitely works. And also, I know that I don't know if we're giving spoilers, so I won't, but the finale really landed for me, which made it a really cute little season one.
Like, yeah.
I was like, wow, way to put a little bow on season one and tie it in a knot and then leave a door open for season two. A very like textbook.
Yeah, I do have questions, and I think you're right, we probably should keep it spoiler free, especially since this is on the main show and it's not like part of the after show. I don't want to like spoil it for people. I do have questions, but the show also leaves it open to say that like though some of those questions might be answered in the upcoming season.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to answer some of the questions.
Some of them. Yeah, well, there's the cliffhanger question, but there's also, like a lot of murder mysteries, they'll do a reveal as this person all along, and you're like, things happen to that person that only the audience is there to view. So did that person do they leave messages or whatever. Like, so did that person leave a message for themselves that only we as the audience know about? So
very method.
Yeah.
Very
method. Just in case there's anybody in the hallway. Yeah. I will also say, when I was younger, before I came out to LA, I was very enamored with New York. I did a business trip up there. It was the first time in like a major city. It really blew my mind. Now, having spent over a decade in LA, I see like this show, and I know a lot of New York shows do this, but they really capture New York, and it's like, oh fuck, I'd fucking hate New York. I see why people like it. Ooh boy, does it not seem like it is for me. Like when they're talking about like you have to tip the building manager, and then you couldn't open your fireplace because of somebody else in the building. You're like, oh fuck, this fucking sucks.
totally. How you said that Martin Short is the one who does it for you. For me, especially in this finale episode, Steve Martin, like. There's one moment where we see something's happening and I'm like, how the fuck is that happening right now? There's no way. And then we see that it's actually in that person's mind. That's what they're doing. And I'm like, he is so fucking funny. Like, I remember being a kid. I was probably like 7 and I bought my first monologue book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all Steve Martin monologues. And I just, he wrote like a monologue book for,
that's crazy, for
actors or whatever. I got to go see if I can find that. It was crazy though. And I just kept reading it. And like every single thing that he writes is hysterical. His performances are hysterical. He sells it in a way that, like, I feel like he's our uncle.
Mm-hmm.
You just know, you know, with Martin Short, I think he's so funny because I'm like, I don't know anybody like that dude.
Yes.
With Steve Martin, I think he's so funny because I'm like, I know so many people like this dude.
And so also, it just works. Not just the line delivery and stuff like that, but the physical comedy he pulls off in, yes, the finale is gold. And I think the inclusion of Selena Gomez is an incredibly smart decision, not just of again, the generational thing, which I really think helps make the show even more accessible, but also where her, the life experience where her character's coming from is very different than theirs. And I think it's a necessarily like counterbalance in between the two. And each generation is able to comment on the other without like putting the other one down. And also, we should mention Tina Fey is also in this occasionally, and she also
so wild.
It's great. Also, the cameos they pull, the whole Sting subplot is fucking fantastic, and I like that the show is smart enough to comment on, like, of course it's not fucking Sting, but these idiots would think like maybe it is. Like, no, it's not fucking Sting, you idiots.
It's really good.
But I want to mention Tina Fey because she gets the joke I laugh the hardest at, which is episode ends with her doing her podcast and it cuts to black. And then she goes into a Squarespace ad. And it was so, as somebody who does the podcasting, that joke was so, that was gold.
It was, they made that joke for us. That was legit, like, that was for the people.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. This is the most I've ever liked Selena Gomez. And I don't mean that as a knock on her, because I don't know her at all.
Yes.
So I didn't know whether I liked her or disliked. I've never seen her. I don't think I've ever seen her in anything.
I think the only thing I've seen her in is Spring Breakers.
Oh, yeah. I think I watched that. That's literally the Spring Break movie, right? Where she,
yes. And a bunch of other young actresses are like robbers, and James Franco's in there, and she's good, but that's not, you're not coming to see Selena Gomez. It's like a whole thing.
And I've heard her music on the radio and stuff, but like, I just have no connection to Selena Gomez.
Yeah.
And I had one friend who was in an episode of Wizards of Waverly Place.
That's it.
And so I watched that episode.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I just have no connection to her. And so watching this, I was like, I really like this girl.
Mm-hmm.
I think she really nails it. And like, she's not playing what they could have done with this character is like oh my God, what's happening with the bodies? I just don't know who's the murderer. Mm-hmm. But instead, she's kind of a little bit of a weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know what her energy is. And she is sometimes a little more subdued, but also gets passionate about things. And she's not that like typical millennial that we're seeing on TV these days.
Yeah.
But I felt like she did play to our generation and was kind of just like level about things. Like, of course I know how to text and I know how to do all of those things, but she wasn't like, I am social media obsessed. Yes. I can't even put my phone down. Mm-hmm. And so obviously in the writer's room, they have some people that are actually millennials who are like, no, that's not how like millennials actually act. Because I feel like every time that the older gen puts millennials on screen, they're just like, and all their friends is like this, they cannot get off of the gram.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what?
Yeah.
Like maybe some people, but who the fuck are you guys depicting? So I really liked her character. I thought she did a good job.
Yeah. And she's a killer at the deadpan. She gets a couple deadpan. Like, I want to say there's a scene where Steve Martin's like, oh, you like it? And she's like, is that what my face is communicating?
Yeah.
And it's just great. The delivery is great. So I highly recommend. It's on Hulu. It's great. And now that Hulu
it'd be a good binge
from
start to finish. Yeah.
Cause again, it's not challenging. I think one of my only real notes is that, I have, and it's early on, this isn't really a spoiler. I have trouble believing the person that is Martin Short's son in that show. I have trouble believing Martin Short, whoever he's married to, would create that. It's like that. I don't know if that person came out of your balls, but okay.
That was a definite interesting move where they were just like clearly wanted to cast that actor. And they were like, we're not going to explain.
Yeah, it's like because Martin Short's like a little elven man. And this guy is like a big guy. He's like my size. Yeah.
I know. You're looking at them and you're like,
whatever. The relationship is nice. There's a lot of great, cute jokes. A lot of characters.
Maybe adopted. I don't know.
Maybe adopted. Oh, and Divine Joy Randolph plays the cop who anybody that saw the Dynamite movie from Eddie Murphy, she's in that, great in that, she's great in this, and I like this that the show explores other characters in and around the building outside of our core trio because it allows them to broaden their view. And like there's another sequence where Martin Short and Steve Martin are tailing somebody and they get in the car of these two other guys and they have a podcast, and it's just an interesting like it's good. Yeah. It's a good show.
Yeah. We only have like 100,000 subscribers or whatever.
Yeah. And it's like, okay. And you know, great stuff, good stuff. And especially if you're listening to podcasts and do podcast, whatever. A lot of great smart jokes specifically to that subculture. Highly recommend. Now, let's get into Eternals. But before we do that, oh my God, you know it. It's another fucking ad break. Gosh dang it.
Yeah, buddy.
Now we're going to talk about Eternals. We're back. Ooh, it's Eternals. And so this is going to be an interesting discussion. This is spoiler-free. But going in, this movie appears to be pretty divisive with people. I know it was kind of divisive when we were coming out of our screening. It appears to be divisive online. The synopsis is the saga of the Eternals, a race of immortal beings who lived on Earth and shaped its history and civilizations. It has a 62% on Rotten Tomatoes as of this recording, which is the lowest a Marvel movie has ever been. Yeah, it's lower than Thor: The Dark World. I do feel inclined to mention that, again, this is an aggregate, and also the way Rotten Tomatoes does its aggregates is it's a binary positive and negative, and so there is nuance. I don't personally think the way Rotten Tomatoes aggregates that stuff is totally helpful, but whatever.
Yeah, but what that means is that more people thought that Thor: The Dark World was good than people who thought that this movie was good.
That is what that information communicates. I think if you were to like actually look at the reviews, there'd be a little bit more nuance there, especially if those reviews are like letter grades.
This is the lowest Rotten Tomatoes Marvel movie ever?
That is my understanding.
I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into that. So I also have that feeling, not about this in particular, but just in general. An ambitious superhero this is the critics' consensus on Rotten Tomatoes. An ambitious superhero epic that soars slightly more than its strains, Eternals takes the MCU in intriguing and occasionally confounding new directions. Of course, it is directed by Chloe Zhao. Written by a bunch of people, Chloe Zhao, Patrick Burley, Ryan Furpo, and Cass Furpo, and those last two are also credited for the story. And it has Gemma Chan, Richard Madden, Angelina Jolie, Salma Hayek, Kit Harington, Kumail Nanjiani, Liam McHugh, Brian Tyree Henry, Lauren Ridloff, Barry Keoghan, Ma Jong-suk, who is people might know from Train to Busan, and he's amazing in that movie. He's amazing in this movie. And then I wanted to mention Harish Patel, who plays Karun. Who is he plays Kumail Nanjiani's like valet or whatever, and he is a treasure. But we'll get into that later. So Roxy, spoiler free thoughts.
I used to start with you.
Okay,
I can't start with me. I'm so upset with the people right now, DJ.
So I think this movie, I understand in one sense why it is divisive in that it moves in a weird way. In some ways, it moves like an old school epic, like it's. I feel like its artistic ambitions are actually similar to Dune's. Like in my brain, I compare the two, even though the way they go about achieving them is very different. And I will say the opening of the movie, and again, no spoilers, but it takes a minute for it to like click into place. And about at the halfway point, it reveals its central conflict. Like, this is actually what we're doing. And for me, that's when the movie clicked. And suddenly, all these characters we're introduced to, reckon with what the conflict is. And I appreciated, and I think this is something that Marvel movies in general tend to be pretty good at, is its character-focused storytelling. It's a lot of this movie is spending time with these characters and unpacking how they feel about their immortality, how they feel about what the Celestials want from them, how they feel about each other. And I find that character focused stuff more compelling than like plot, sci-fi, world building shit. And I like a lot of these actors. And so even there's aspects of this movie that I would describe as messy. There's parts that feel like cluttered and kind of messy and kind of clunky. It definitely feels like a lot of Marvel movies in that it could have used one or two more passes on the script. I feel like, I did enjoy it. I like a lot of these actors. I like how effortlessly inclusive this movie is. Like, obviously it's an ensemble piece, but kind of our main protagonist is Gemma Chan as Cersei. And so you have a British actress of Asian descent who's your lead. And it's not like the movie pauses for you to like give it a pat on the back for that. It just treats it like, well, of course. You know what I mean? We have Lauren Ridloff, who's a deaf actress. And again, she's just there and part of the movie. And it's not like the movie stops and like, hey, look how good we're doing. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just effortlessly inclusive. And I think that's kind of the benefit that the Eternals give the Marvel vehicle in that nobody gives a flying fuck about the Eternals. So, like, you can do whatever the fuck you want. Like, in the comics, 90% of the Eternals are white dudes. And so they completely changed that for this movie. And I can't imagine, unless it's like a bad faith argument, comic fans getting up in arms about it because nobody cares. Nobody, like, it's not like the Eternals are anybody's favorite superhero team. And so it allows them a little bit of freedom, but I do think it creates tension between the traditional Marvel formula and what the movie's trying to do that I don't quite know that the movie overcomes. But I enjoyed it. Those are my spoiler-free thoughts.
I wonder if this is doing so poorly because it's like the sexiest of the Marvel movies.
I mean, goddamn, this is. I mean, there is a sex scene, but also this is a beautiful cast of people.
Yeah, sexy in all the ways. There's like a few different intimate moments. Oh, okay. So I have to get over the fact that people suck, and I guess just go over the fact that I really liked this movie.
Yeah.
I really liked this movie for several reasons. One of the reasons is kind of not because what you were just talking about, DJ, but it's different because of that reason. You know, this is a well-rounded group of people that look like my friends.
Yes.
Look like this world.
Yeah.
And so everybody not only looks different and has different backgrounds, but they all have different powers that are like vastly different from one another.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool. Sometimes as I'm watching the Avengers or Justice League or whatever it is, it's kind of like, well, a lot of people are really fast.
Yes.
And a lot of people are really strong. And a lot of people can really fight. And this was like, I can't believe that coming out of this movie, I feel pretty confident that I know at least 50% of what each person's powers are, if not more. So I feel like I had an understanding. I know nothing about the Eternals. And after watching this movie, I feel unbelievably invested in at least 5 different characters.
Yeah.
Which is really crazy. And like, I have an understanding of all of them. Like, I really enjoy this ensemble cast and felt intrigued and invested in so many individuals, with Cersei, with Icarus, with Athena, with Ajax. And honestly, with Camille's character too, even though he's more comedic relief at times, I really liked what they did with his storyline, which I won't be specific about, but I understood his position on things, and I understood a lot of people's position on things.
And to that note, something I really appreciate about the movie is the movie respects these characters enough to stand by their decisions. There's no like a character says this is what I'm about, and there's no like miraculous backtracking later. It's like the movie's like, no, that's what they decided, and that's just the way it is, because that happens in life. People say, like, I'm going to stand on this side, and you just have to be like, all right.
Because usually in life, people do. When they make a decision, they usually do double down. They don't usually double back. Yeah. So, like, yeah, I thought that was really cool. I liked a lot of these relationships. They were interesting dynamics where they're complicated.
Yeah.
And it's not black and white. And you look at duos or even trios, and you think, I see the predicament here.
Yeah.
I see what's happening. So character-wise, this movie really worked for me, which I never expected because it's Eternals and I don't give a fuck about that.
Yes.
So the fact that the strongest part of this movie was the characters, I was like, that's dope.
I think the fact that, like, it seems like you're in the same boat. The fact that we came out of this movie like, oh, I want more Eternals movies, says it did its job.
Right. Story-wise, I liked the story totally enough. I was like, all right, I'm in enough. It doesn't seem like it's not my main love of this movie.
Yeah.
I didn't walk out of this and say, that was the most unique, original, incredible, mind-blowing plot. Because the plot is relatively simple.
Yeah.
But on that note, it's not convoluted.
Yeah.
I got it. I got what we were trying to do. I like movies that do that. I don't like movies where it's an ensemble. Everybody has a different thing they're trying to accomplish. I get lost in what are we actually trying to do here?
Yeah.
I knew what we were trying to do. I knew who laid on what side. And I thought that it was very, because everything else, as people would say, was, wow, I forgot the word again. Dense. DJ, yeah. That's what I was trying to tell you afterwards. Everybody kept saying this was dense. I didn't find it dense. I found it fully loaded, but digestible.
Yeah.
But because we had so much else going on, I liked that the plot was kind of simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's a smart thing. I think it's something that picked up from Avengers. Like Avengers, like who's the villain of Avengers? It's Loki. Like, and it's not as big as we get later, but it's smart to be like, no, the star of the movie is this group of people. And I think they took that. I think it's a smart for this type of movie. I think that's a smart lesson to take away. I think it's something Justice League could have benefited from. And I think it's something this movie benefits from. Like the plot, it only matters in so much as it gets this group of characters together and interacting and sharing their views and stuff. You know what I mean? Like creating that conflict. That's what matters. The conflict between these characters is what matters. The bigger thing is just an excuse for that to happen.
Yes, it was a little bit of a bummer going back to something you mentioned, DJ. I saw this the same week the same week, 3 days after I saw Dune.
Mm-hmm.
The movies are nothing alike, but one of the biggest pros of Eternals is how it looks.
Yeah.
It just looks so wonderful.
Yeah.
But coming right after Dune, it was hard to be blown away by how Eternals looked.
You're right. And it was interesting too, because I couldn't help but compare them in my brain, and I couldn't help but feel like, man, if you could just take the best elements from both these movies, I think you'd have, for me, a perfect epic. Because the scale of Dune is incredible, but I don't find myself really connecting to anybody or their perspective. They're all just kind of ciphers for the plot to move forward. So if you could use not the characters, but the same attention to characterization, put that in as something as big as Dune. It's and what I feel like I'm describing is basically like the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where it's like, you know, you care about all the people and their perspectives, but also the scale is huge, and all the things. I felt like, but I found myself. I think I learned something about my interests a little bit more, because I find myself gravitating to enjoying Eternals more, because I think that human element, I feel like I love genre fiction, I love sci-fi, I love fantasy, I love all that stuff. But I think that stuff only matters so much as it communicates a human idea, or something that me, who does not live in a fantasy world, can come away with. And I'm not saying Dune doesn't have that, but that human aspect is more easily accessible in Eternals. And I think it values that more than Dune does. I think Dune is way more into its giant sets and giant situations and giant worlds and giant whatever. And none of that, that's great. But I think what Eternals is doing, I think overall, I find more appealing. But you're right. If you're comparing the visuals, it's like, wow, this is a visually stunning movie that is completely dwarfed by what Dune was doing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What do you think about Kayla Marie's question, who says, where does this rank among current MCU phase? So Shang-Chi, Black Widow, and Eternals.
That's tough. I meant to rewatch Black Widow this week, but I didn't have a chance. If I didn't have my hangups with how Shang-Chi's third act, Shang-Chi would probably be top. It's hard for me to compare with that in mind. So it's either Eternals or Black Widow, and they feel so different to me. Like they're so maybe Eternals. But again, what's the thing I liked about Black Widow? I like those characters and I like them bouncing off of each other. That's what I enjoyed about it. So I guess in that sense, they are similar. Maybe Eternals, just, but it's also the one I saw the most recently. So maybe that's why. Do you have a clear cut?
I know that Black Widow's last for me.
Okay.
I feel the same way about Shang-Chi, not the whole third act, but you know, there's a 20-minute period in there that I really fucking struggle with.
Yeah.
But I really loved that movie. I think overall, this might be first in the phase for me. I have to watch Shang-Chi again.
Yeah.
But I really liked Eternals. Like, I walked out and was like, I really like that.
Yeah. Let's get to some of the questions in the Discord, from the Discord. Jake Hefner asks, why do you think Eternals... what do you think about Eternals being so divisive? Some people I follow say it's boring as hell, while others I follow really dug it. And I think it's a nice change up from the typical MCU formula. I haven't found much middle ground between the two. And Danny in the chat mentions, didn't Eternals get review bombed as one of the platforms because of homophobes? And I do wonder that even though the movie doesn't, it's not like they're not marketing this movie as like the most inclusive movie, whatever, ever. It just is. But I do wonder if there's pushback because of that. But also because I think now people really want more of the same. And this is like, what if we changed it just a little bit? I don't know. But what do you think? Why do you think it's so divisive and the pushback is happening?
I'm just surprised with people calling it boring, because I feel like those people then don't care about characters and they just want to see punches all the time. And there are action sequences in this, but maybe the people who thought this were boring are people who love just action and wanted this to be an action movie.
I rewatched, Aquaman this week, and I really enjoy that movie. I did, and really love that big, dumb, goofy movie. But to your point, it is like that movie fucking trucks. It's either somebody's punching somebody, or we're introducing a new idea, or there's some new glowy object, and I love it for that. But I'm also glad that Eternals is not that. You know what I mean? Like different movies require different things. And of course, an Aquaman movie, who's dealing with a very derided superhero, you know, just jam packs it with all the biggest ideas ever. It's different. But like, even on the other end of the spectrum, Dark Knight, who is a very serious movie, also that movie is something I describe as dense. You're getting new plot information. It's always moving. So you're right. Maybe those people that find this boring respond more to something like that.
Yeah. I just didn't find this not one point in the movie did I think this is slow.
Yes.
Not one time. Not one time did I think this is boring. This is slow. This is dragging. It's ironic to me that people think that this movie is dense and boring, because usually those two. I don't know. I wouldn't have thought, if I was the first person to see this movie and you had said to me, what do you think people are going to feel about Eternals? I would have said, I think people are going to love it.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised, because sometimes I like things that I can see why nobody else liked it. And I'm like, I get it.
Yeah.
But with this, I feel like it's kind of easy to like.
Yeah. And in that sense, it does feel like a throwback to when, and obviously this is not to say that there's not a lot of franchise building in this movie. There is. There's a lot of like connecting the MCU and building up other stuff. That said, the feel of the movie, it feels like a movie back when we made movies, like back when movies just got to be movies.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, I agree with you. It's like, in that sense, it's like, it's pretty accessible, whatever. I also like this question from Kevin. How much do you think the history would go down if the Eternals were not around to begin with? And I feel like this is a question we can answer without spoilers, but it is an interesting question, because
how much would history go down?
Yeah, like how much of history would stay the same if the Eternals weren't involved? And this is a question, maybe this is a spoiler question, because I do have some questions about how involved and uninvolved the Eternals are in the way the MCU is supposed to have played out.
I don't get the question. How much would history stay the same?
Yeah. So like basically how, if the Eternals were not part, how much did the Eternals change the trajectory of the MCU?
So the future.
Well, no, the because we do, the movie hints that they are involved in human history. For all they're like, we're not involved. There are a few scenes that are like, we did this. And it's like, well, how involved were you in shaping human history? I think specifically with like,
I get the question.
Technology, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I get the question. I don't know. I think that humans would have always found a way to fuck things up.
That I agree with. So. That I agree with. We got this one from...
Oh, DJ, I didn't say this, though, and I want to, just so everybody in here knows, because I had no effing idea who this was. I love this guy, Barry Keoghan.
Barry Keoghan, yeah.
I don't know who that. I'm obsessed with this man.
So he was in.
He like stole the show for me at times. I thought he was so fucking good.
He's very good, and I think his subplot. We get a little bit of like the Eternals, what the Eternals have been up to since whatever. His, I think, is the most interesting. Like it's a great example, and we'll talk about it in spoilers. It's a great example of showing, not telling. Mm-hmm. That illustrates the difficulty with the Eternals.
I guess I've seen him in a lot of other things and just didn't know. Barry Keoghan is how you say it?
I believe so. I could be incorrect. He was also supposed to be York in the Why Last Man show and he dropped out.
Oh my God. This man was like everything in the movie. I thought he was his technique. I was like, damn, he is acting fucking not circles around people because everybody was good, but I was like, whoa.
Yeah. He did a really good job. And again, the casting in this is top notch. Kayla Marie asks, what other Game of Thrones people should we add to the MCU? I want all of them. Cause of course we've got, two of them. We got two of the Stark boys in it. And of course we've got, Daenerys showing up in Secret Invasion. You don't think more Game of Thrones people?
No, I do. I just, Emilia Clarke does not do it for me.
Interesting. I like Emilia Clarke.
Yeah, I loved her on Game of Thrones, but did you see me before you?
No. I sure didn't.
Did you see Last Christmas?
I sure didn't.
All right.
So you're saying I might not have full context to make that judgment.
Just look at her. Look at how she uses her brows. Mm-hmm. All right. Who would I want to see? I think an easy answer would be Lena Headey.
Yeah, 100%. I've been a fan of her since she was in Sarah Connor Chronicles, that TV show. And she's in Dread. She's fucking great. I love that actress so much. And it has to be a villain. I mean, it doesn't have to be. She's a really talented actress.
She could be, right. Yeah. Like, she could have been Hela.
Yep.
I called her Mara. Am I an Aquaman again? Yeah. She could have been like a Hela type or anything like that. She's great. On that note, I think like Gwendolyn Christie would do a good job.
I was just thinking that. She'd be great. She's going to be Lucifer in the new Sandman show, but she was wasted in the new Star Wars movie. So give her a Marvel movie, you're crying out loud.
Yeah. And then we've already had Maisie and Sophie in...
X movies, but listen, X-Men, those don't count anymore. Yeah. Recast them.
We don't know that. I still have so much hope. I still have so much hope for New Mutants in the future. I like that movie. But I get why people didn't.
Yeah, but you get why people didn't. Also, I'd be fine. That cast is so great. I wouldn't mind. Or specifically like Maisie Williams and... why am I blanking? Fucking Anya Taylor-Joy. Let them do maybe more important Marvel characters.
Yeah.
Also throw out there Natalie Emmanuel, who's also in the Fast movies, so she's proven she can do the blockbuster stuff, and I think I like her as an actress.
So basically what we're saying is you guys have pulled over a lot of the men, maybe snag up some of the women.
Yes, that is what we're saying. And I think this is a good question for us to end on. I think it's a very key question based on a lot of what we've mentioned. A new guy asks, who is the hottest Eternal? And this is difficult. Because there's not a bum note in the bunch.
There isn't, but to me, because usually I have a really hard time with this person, because of my loyalty.
Okay.
But to me, the hottest Eternal is like no question Angelina Jolie. What she looks like in this movie is like she is chiseled from it's insane. It's insane. Yes. Every angle, every moment, every eye shot, everything. And my reference was to Team Jen. You know my loyalty.
Got it. I was going to circle back on that.
Everybody, Gemma Chan is fucking gorgeous. Yeah. Like Lauren Ridoff is beautiful.
Yeah. Yes, she is.
There's so many good looking people in here. Richard Madden, super hot. Barry Keoghan, who I am now obsessed with. He looks hot as hell. Like Camille's body in this, you guys saw what he did, but he's just gorgeous as a man. Everybody's hot.
I also like that he didn't, watching the movie now, he didn't need to go that far.
I know. I thought about that, DJ. I was just like, wow, this was something they did not utilize.
Yeah, that is a choice that he made. He made like, listen, I'm getting Marvel movie money. I'm going to get fucking in shape, dude.
Selma Hayek. I didn't even name her, by the way. Like, yeah, Selma Hayek.
But I agree with you that Angelina Jolie, it's the same. She was in, it got released to HBO Max. It was a Ty Sheridan movie. She played a firefighter or like a forest ranger or whatever. And so it's like kind of a grounded, almost like a crime thriller drama. And it's like, every time her face is on screen, you're like, what the fuck am I? It's like a special effect. Like what the fuck? Like how did this happen?
Ty Sheridan movie.
Yeah. He is the person that wrote.
No, I know who that is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's those who wish me dead.
Yeah. Those who wish me dead. Yeah. And the movie's fine. There's one element that feels a little bit too heightened for what the movie is. But like
Taylor Sheridan, who is not, I thought you were saying Ty Sheridan, like the actor.
No. And I'm glad I got it right. Cause I confuse those, quite often, but that's like a grounded movie and it's almost like bullshit. Andrew, this stunning person works as a ranger. Fuck off with that shit.
It's just too, it's wild. Like her, I've never seen a face like hers.
Yes. But so in this, when you're like, oh, she's fundamentally a goddess. You're like, yes, that tracks.
Yes. And it's crazy. Cause in a world in which it tracks with every single person, I still can't stop staring at
her. Yeah. It's crazy. I will say that she's kind of underutilized in this movie. Like it feels like I don't know if you need to spring Angelina Jolie money on this part, but it helps.
I thought that she was, I felt for her in my soul. So mm-hmm. I thought she was utilized properly, but I get that it is interesting that to me, at least, she is by far and away the biggest star in this movie.
Yes.
And she has never played like the biggest star in the movie.
Oh, I did fuck it up, Rock. You were right. Ty Sheridan is the actor. Taylor Sheridan is the writer.
Yeah.
I made the mistake that I was afraid I was going to make. You can all make fun of me online.
No worries. And then you were like, I'm glad I didn't fuck it up. And I was just like, I'm going to let him think that.
Yeah, I'm going to give him this. I'm going to give him this.
No, we all need these moments.
Tell me when I fuck up, please, so I can cut it out. No. So those are our spoiler-free thoughts. Next week, if you're listening to this as a podcast, we're going to do a full spoiler breakdown. So since this is prior to its release, that's full spoiler-free. Next week will be after its release. We're going to really dive into the movie. So please stay tuned to that. But in the meantime, while you have to wait for our spoiler reviews, Roxy, where can the kids find you?
Everywhere at Roxy Stryer, and I'll tell you what I'm doing there.
Go there, please. You can find me at DJ Talks Trash. You can follow the show everywhere that matters at Only Stupid Answers, but on Twitter.
You ain't got the vowels from stupid.
And again, I stepped on it. I'm sorry, Roxy. I stepped on it. Check out for anybody that backed Hellbent. Keep your peepers peeled on your inbox because you should be getting either news about shipping or tracking numbers or any of that stuff should be happening soon. And I want to thank everybody who backed again. And we will see you all next week. Bye, everybody.